Okay, we're all set. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Hello. We've been chatting off the record here. We're talking to Chad Hyatt, of all things, not a member of the hotel chain family, but no. A superstar in his own right. All around, first of all, note, listeners, he is a trained and experienced chef, which has made a great deal of difference in this book that we're going to be talking about, which actually is called The Mushroom Hunter's Kitchen, subtitled, and this is important, A Culinary Homage to Wild and Cultivated Mushrooms. And Chad, this is one special, wonderful book. Loved it.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, and I'm really excited to hear you enjoyed the book. It's it obviously a kind of a passion project and something really important to me, so I'm excited to hear you were enjoying it.
Well, you are an expert forager and as well as a chef, but I'll tell you, how many recipes do you have in here, 200 or something? 120 recipes, and they show the chefy side as well as the endless number of books that just do the same usual boring stuff with mushrooms. I think your chefing comes in handy in creating these very adventurous and wonderful recipes.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think the reason I really wanted to write the book in the first place was because I was looking for ideas for myself for just new things to do, because as a forager, I always had probably too many mushrooms in my fridge, my wife would tell me. And so when I have a million cookbooks and everything seemed like kind of the same old ideas, and I wanted to push myself into doing some more interesting stuff. But my focus was always still just, you know, simple, good food that anybody would want to eat. It's not, I don't want it to just be a novelty. It has to be good to eat, or what's the point?
Well, Peter wanted to ask you something.
Let's get back to real basics. Chad, what's a mushroom?
What is a mushroom? Mushroom. So, I think that's a fun question, and that kind of is another big thing that it seems obvious, but forever we've treated mushrooms like they're just another vegetable, and they're really not. They're their own entity entirely. They're really mushrooms are in their own kingdom entirely, away from vegetables, away from animals, and they need to be treated as such. The mushroom is really kind of the fruit almost. It's in the plant kingdom, if a mushroom. In the fungi kingdom, the mushroom is kind of the analog to a fruit that a plant has. So the actual organism is, you know, running underground or in wood, whatever, these little invisible fibers, basically, called mycelium. And the mushroom is what it pushes up. It's kind of a reproductive structure. And so, again, a fruit. And again,
is it true that mushrooms talk to each other through these mycelium?
I'm probably not the expert on that subject, but there's been a lot of talk about how mushrooms kind of have this underground information web that communicates between trees and such.
Yeah, well, I mean, I thought it was fascinating. They're talking about trees talking to each other too. I don't know, but who knows?
Well, the idea is that a lot of mushrooms are. People think of mushrooms as just kind of growing in compost, but a lot of mushrooms actually grow symbiotically with trees. So if you want to seek out those mushrooms, you have to seek the trees. And a lot of our really fancy gourmet mushrooms like truffles and porcini and chanterelles are kind of in this symbiotic group, what we call mycorrhizal. And when they talk about the trees talking to each other with this mycelial network, that's the network is part of those, that's the actual organism is from those mushrooms.
Now,
Peter,
tell us more about this thing called a mushroom. Peter's having trouble getting the words out. So he's handing over to Anne.
I'm sorry. I didn't get that.
It's not important. I was going to delete it. I was going to delete it anyway.
Well, but I mean,
we already asked the question. What's a mushroom? Now let's go on beyond that and say, okay. So I'm asking that question. How are there so many of them out there?
Yeah, I never knew there were so. I mean, I thought I was pretty up on mushrooms because I'm a mushroom lover. But you have mushrooms I never even heard of in this book. And we ought to interject now that you have a section, a large section of your book, naming and identifying and classifying all these different mushrooms, both wild and cultivated. And anybody reading that is going to learn that they know zilch, really, about the, unless they're foragers or specialists about mushrooms.
Let's put a word in here too that we shouldn't bypass, because it is rather important.
Yeah, mushrooms, I think
mushrooms take on flavors, but they probably shouldn't. They're not necessarily things you should eat unless you ask someone, is this really a mushroom?
Yeah. Now he's talking about that. You do talk about the dangers of eating things, mushrooms you're not sure about. And I mean, we went to a presentation by a very experienced mushroom forager in the mushroom club and the whole thing. Who ended up still getting food poisoning. And you have interesting things, because I never knew that if you ate too many of some mushrooms, that's bad for you too. Tell us a little bit about the danger of this hunting for mushrooms.
So I think that, there's a lot to unpack there. First, there is a huge variety of mushrooms, and it goes back to kind of the previous question that there's mushrooms kind of have their own kingdom entirely, and we think of mushrooms as just one thing, but it's like saying, what is a vegetable? There's really probably as many different kinds of mushrooms as there are plants. So we there's only a few of them that we cultivate, and there's a lot of specialty ones that people cultivate that we're just starting to see in markets now and starting to see in kind of specialty places. But when you get out into the wild, it's like trying to identify every plant you see when you walk in the woods. It's so vast. It's you can spend a lifetime trying to learn them all. But in terms of dangers, It's certainly, you don't want to just go out into the forest or into the fields and just start picking and eating any mushrooms you see. Mushrooms are completely safe if you don't put them in your mouth and eat them. you can handle mushrooms, you can pick them up, but you should, the first rule of being safe about picking mushrooms is you don't eat anything unless you're 100% sure of what it is. And It takes time to get good at that skill, but it's something that anybody can learn if they're good at paying attention to details and they're willing to put a little work in. And I think that these days there's a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of local clubs almost everywhere in the U.S. There's local clubs now with experts who can help you learn, and there's a lot of good books out there, and there's a lot of good online resources too. So if you want to learn, there's resources out there. But in terms of safety, you should never be eating anything unless you're 100% sure of what it is. And just looking at a picture online and guessing that it looks close is not a way to be 100% sure.
That's good. So, good advice, yeah. I mean, I often wonder about the chefs that answer their kitchen door, the back door, and somebody sparges mushrooms and they buy them and serve them. I mean, it's a wonder we don't have more poisonings.
Well, there have been a couple cases I've seen over the years where I'm kind of amazed there haven't been poisonings too. But for the most part, the people selling them are only selling a few very easy to recognize and easy to learn species, like right. chanterelles and like porcini. And there's starting to be a lot more of a network of kind of certification and understanding. And usually the chefs don't want to sell anything that they don't know themselves already either. Because I mean, as a chef, I can tell you, I worry very much about making my customers sick because it's my livelihood. If I make somebody sick from a dumb decision, that's going to affect my ability to make a living. And most chefs feel the same way. So we're pretty cautious about serving things to customers. There's a lot of mushrooms I've eaten myself that I'm quite confident in the identification and safety of that I still would not serve to customers because there's just on principle there's things I wouldn't do. But
I want to mention something really stupid. I'm listening to your voice for the first time, and it doesn't match the author's photograph, the portrait of you in the book.
That's a funny thing to say. My wife is sitting next to me, and she thinks I look like my voice, I think. But can I just say one thing back to the previous discussion here?
Sure. Yes.
I just to tie it back to the book. I just want to make the point that part of my motivation with the book was to show people what a huge variety and what a world of mushrooms there is out there. But at the same time, I wanted the book to be very much adaptable. A large majority of the recipes will work with whatever mushrooms you have in front of you. But I wanted to open people's eyes of just to what a crazy, wild, varied world mushrooms are. So, but that shouldn't scare you away. You don't have to be a forager to use the book. I think that was...
Well, you've done that. I mean, I think people are going to have a whole new horizon on mushrooms just picking up this book. I mean, I'm so impressed. I don't know what to say next to you. You have all these interesting little side things too, like your little section on truffles, which I thought was very interesting. We've interviewed some truffle cultivators in Tasmania and Western Australia, and that's a whole other game unto itself.
Actually, there's people cultivating truffles now all over the place. I know people where I live in California and various parts of California who are planting truffle orchards, and I know some people on the East Coast who have truffle orchards, and there are a few of them. I know some people on the East Coast that are starting to produce, and I know at least one person on the West Coast that are starting to produce, and it's completely changed the game where traditionally it's only, you know, kind of the stereotype of the old man walking around with their pig, or these days it's more often a trained dog looking for them, and crazy how it's changed now.
Well, they used to use pigs, but the pigs used to eat the truffle.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why now they mainly use dogs now, because the dog, they just want the treat they get it when they find something. For them, it's just a game.
Yeah, I mean, we interviewed people. They impregnated a tennis ball with a truffle essence, and then the dog trained the dog that way to find it. It was interesting. Let's step back to this book, which has amazing photography in it, which is really impressive. I mean, like, you have so many unusual, original recipes in here. I mean, I just opened the book in front of me, and I found Prince Mushroom, which I never heard of, by the way, kale and buckwheat salad. I mean, so, it's like, yeah, I mean, well, I know porcini, of course, but never thought of pairing it with arugula, and that's a match made in heaven. I mean, tell us some of your favorite discoveries in creating these recipes.
So, it's funny. Some of them, they come from different places. Some of the recipes come from kind of really traditional things that I grew up eating, or that I've been cooking in restaurants, or just kind of happy comfort foods that I've come across the way, that kind of I just twisted into a mushroom thing where it's, oh, so I realize now if I do this way, it actually works really well with mushrooms. Some of them are just, well, this mushroom has this flavor. I'll give you an example. You kind of just hinted at there's a recipe in there with the Prince mushroom. So the Prince mushroom is, it's in a genus called Agaricus, and I promise I won't get too deep into the science, but the genus Agaricus is the one that has kind of the white button mushroom and the cremini and the portobello, which, by the way, are all actually cultivars of the same species.
Yeah, I know that there was a funny cartoon of an elf living under a mushroom. And he said, I'm moving up, and it's, you know, their usual button mushroom. And he said, or cremini, and he said, I'm moving up, I'm finding a portobello.
Exactly. So there's a group in the genus of Agaricus that have this natural almond extract smell that just occurs naturally in the mushroom, like a sweet almond extract smell. And the prince is one of these mushrooms that has this strong smell. And so back to your question of why, where some of these recipes come from, that sweet almond extract smell made me want to start using those mushrooms in the same way I use other things where I want that sweet almond extract smell. And so there's actually some desserts in the book where I kind of candy that mushroom and use it in the desserts. And there's a salad with the prince paired with buckwheat and cranberry that I just, as funny as it sounds, I was working breakfast one day at a job, and I made buckwheat and cranberry pancakes, and I wound up putting some almond extract in, and it was so good, and it just turned out that I had the prince mushroom at my house that day. I found some the day before, and I had some. And so that salad kind of came out of that pancake, as funny as it sounds. So the inspiration comes from strange places, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Wait, you know, you have a whole chapter on sweet treats with dessert mushrooms. I mean, who would have ever thought? I mean, because they're earthy, you know, really. But you know more about them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of I know that's one that always surprises people, and there's one mushroom that's endemic to the area where I live called a candy cap. And the candy cap has a natural sweet maple syrup kind of smell. It actually has the same chemical in it that fenugreek has, or that they use to make artificial maple syrup. And it just naturally occurs in this mushroom, and it gets really strong when you dry it. And so a lot of people get introduced to the idea of mushrooms in desserts, where they put this kind of candy cap mushroom into desserts, and that this sweet aroma permeates everything. And so I started playing around. I mentioned the Prince, where it has this sweet almond extract aroma. And my wife is from Catalonia in Spain, she's from Spain, and they have, there's a classic almond cookie kind of called a panayet that they make there every All Saints Day in November. And so I started putting this prince, like dried version of this prince powdered up into these cookies, and this almond extract smell would permeate these cookies, and it was really good. And there's, from where her mother's from on the other side of Spain, they do an almond cake that, again, the same idea. I would put this almond extract mushroom in there, and it would permeate. And it was really fun, and I started playing. There's chanterelles. A lot of people describe chanterelles as having kind of an apricot-y, fruity aroma to them. And they're earthy flavored, but the fruitiness comes through if they're good.
Yeah, I'm looking here at this recipe for a chanterelle jelly roll. That's the last thing that I would ever thought possible.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you take chanterelles, and I love that recipe. I've made that recipe for a lot of people over the years. When you take the chanterelles and you kind of candy them, and same thing as candying anything else, just kind of cook them in sugar syrup and cook them down, and that fruity aroma that people describe stays there, but they take on the earthiness gets kind of buried a little bit, and they take on the character of almost just another piece of fruit. And so that jelly roll, I kind of blend up those candied chanterelles and make it part of the batter, and actually use it as part of the jam also. I just make the candied chanterelles into the jam for the jelly roll. And one of the very first desserts I did actually was with the candied chanterelle, just made a galette like you would make with fruit, using the candied chanterelles mixed with fruit. And people were so blown away by it. I knew I was onto something. And I brought it to a party just to kind of see what people would say, and people were fighting for it. So that's when I knew I was onto something with some of these mushroom desserts.
Yeah, well, I wondered about it because I'm looking here at this blueberry porcini ice cream. Again, beyond my ken altogether.
That's another fun one, actually. That's another fun one. I'm sorry I cut you off there. I apologize. So the blueberry and porcini.
This is something you do because of it's an enhancement, putting the mushroom in there, or is it something you do when you have a whole bunch of porcinis and don't know what to do with them?
No, so I think it's a fun combination, and it works. I worked at a restaurant, 15 years ago. I was working the line on a restaurant, and there was a dish on my station that was a mushroom dish, but it had a blueberry sauce. And when I saw it listed on the menu, I thought the chef was crazy, who I was working for at the time. And then I tasted it, and it totally made sense, the blueberry with the porcini. And then as not too long after that, I remember being out picking porcini in the mountains one summer, and I realized I was in the middle of a blueberry patch. So I was picking porcini in a blueberry patch, so picking them both at the same time in the same place. And
well, that's what they say about companion gardening. You should do that.
Yeah, if it grows together, they can be eaten together. It's like kind of one of these old truisms in cooking. And the thing is, like with the ice cream, for example, the porcini is not the dominant flavor, but the earthy background plays really nicely with the blueberries, with the sweetness, with the creaminess. And that's actually, again, one of the desserts I've been serving for the longest time. I've probably been serving that dessert, that ice cream, for at least 10 years. And everybody always likes it. So, and I want to make the point also that when I'm testing recipes, I'm not testing them on mushroom people, because I don't, for them, a lot of times it is the novelty. I want to make sure I'm testing it on people who don't care about the mushrooms, because it's much more honest that way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, of course, you have this section in the back of a further reading and resources for mushrooms. I mean, I don't know how many people are going to go foraging, but I can't remember the name of the source I used when I was doing demos of. I have a mushroom soup recipe that I changed from mushrooms to wild mushrooms, and I just purchased them from a company. It's probably in your list here. Can you explain why all of a sudden, every time I pick up anything, it has to do with mushrooms? What is this current craze with mushrooms?
Honestly, it's as funny to me as it is to you. I was kind of, for many years, I was the weird guy who was interested in mushrooms, and all of a sudden in popular culture, they're kind of having their moment in the sun. And I'm not exactly sure what kicked that off. I think it's maybe a lot of things at once. I think that there's part of it is probably that a lot of people started talking about kind of health and medicinal value of mushrooms, and that turned it into a kind of an exciting fad sort of thing on some level. And I think that there's been a couple people who have gotten into the mainstream of popular culture who, I mean, I'll say Paul Stamets is somebody whose name has shown up a lot, and, you know, kind of that Fantastic Fungi movie. That's another thing that got everything into people's kind of conscience. And even HBO had a series where they were doing, you know, the mushrooms were the villain, basically, that were wiping out humanity. It was kind of, they're everywhere now. It's fun for me because I've had kind of a niche audience for a while, and it's taken me more into the mainstream, so I appreciate it. But I wish I could explain it. Like I said, I think it's as funny to me as it is to you.
Let me just plug this book one more time, Chad Hyatt. It's called The Mushroom Hunter's Kitchen. And boy, is it worth, I don't know what it costs, but it's worth buying and reading and keeping on your shelf for all kinds of information, and also for really wonderful recipes, listeners. You must be having a good time, Chad Hyatt, keep having a good time. And I hope your book does very well, because it's something that people really ought to absorb, because it's important.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's fun talking to you, and I appreciate the kind words.
Great. So we'll talk again with your next book.
Sounds wonderful. All right, thanks.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net. Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.